This is an interview with Connie McCready at her home in northeast Portland, Oregon. The interviewer for the Oregon Historical Society is Clark Hansen. The date is March 28, 1994, and this is tape 4, side 1. So you were explaining about your going back to work.
Yeah, by that time it wasn't so much of I am the lord of the mansion as I think he was worried about my personal safety, because there were a lot of threats going on, and there were fights, and there were all kinds of unpleasantries. But that sort of thing didn't intimidate me. It just made me madder and more anxious to get down there.
Yeah.
So
so that's what you did then?
Yeah. What they called me for was, I was a little put out because that they come down and be editor of the Home and Garden magazine, and my golly, my home was a disaster, and my garden would be my home would be condemned by the health department. And I thought, oh heavens, I don't belong. And you've seen my gardening efforts.
It's delightful. Your house is delightful. I just have to put that on record on the tape here that your house is beautiful and it's very orderly, and your garden is delightful.
Well, if you look closer, you'll see as many dandelions in some places as you see the other.
But why did they ask you to do that? I mean, why did you have a background at all?
I think what they needed primarily was my editing abilities. They certainly didn't need me for they didn't even ask about my home and garden type, but they needed someone to, a lot of the stuff, you know, you buy it, comes across on the wires, right. You know, you get a lot of canned stuff, and you can assign stories to be done to reporters on the paper, or I bought a lot of stuff from local contributors. I thought that made it, gave it lots more spontaneity and it's more interesting, but it wasn't really my field at all. I really preferred general assignment because it was more exciting. You never knew what you were going to be doing. Every day was a change. And when I was on general assignment, I think it was the most fun of all. And you name it, I covered practically everything, because during the war they were so short-handed that we'd be assigned everything. And then when people went on vacation, I would be, I don't know why it was always Connie, but I would get these, did market editor, and I covered the courts and I always got some big story that was been carried on for years, would come back up, you know, and I think, oh no, like in courts, there was one, it was a power company, a fight with PGE and...
Public power?
Yeah.
Was it the public power issue?
No, it was Pepco. There were two... there were two private power companies in some big battle. I can't remember. It had been going on for years, and it had stopped for a while, and they brought it back up just as I took over for a couple of weeks. And oh my gosh, Alger Fee was the Fed judge. It was in the Fed courts. And I didn't have the slightest idea what this was. But Alger Fee was Uncle Alger to me. I mean, when they lived in Pendleton, they would come down and always stay at our house when they were when he became a Fed judge here. Why, they stayed at our house and we drove them around while they house hunted and everything. So I thought, oh, that's just great. I'll go in and ask Uncle Alger about this. And I went in and asked Uncle Alger, and he blew up. My God, I saw a side of Uncle Alger I had never seen before.
I've heard about that side.
Oh, because he was such a disciplinarian. He was so strict to stay. He was such an honest guy, and he was a neat guy, and I didn't think that there was anything the slightest bit wrong with my asking him what in the hell this was all about. I guess there was, because he certainly told me off that was absolutely inappropriate. and that it wasn't his fault that the Oregonian, and it wasn't, the Oregonian should have sent somebody who, they shouldn't have let the guy take his vacation when they did. Taylor had been court's reporter for 1,000 years, and he probably wanted to get out of there when this thing came back up. It was just a terribly complex and convoluted case that nobody could really explain it. It just had gone on and on and on. So I just thought, well, I'll just have to cover it as anybody goes in, and this is what they're saying, and this is, God knows. But I'll never forget my horror at standing there in front of Uncle Alger and getting dressed down.
Boy.
That was something.
What an experience.
Oh, it was. Because I was so totally unprepared for it. My heart was pure, and I knew he was a straight arrow, and right. But I guess you can't discuss a case with the presiding judge, and I was the press, and...
No matter what your private relationship with him was like, it had to be...
Yeah, he couldn't talk about the case.
Circumspect.
Yeah. Huh. You know, it's really funny, being a reporter became quite a... There was some very strange and interesting experiences about that. When I went into politics, here I had been a reporter for so long, and I had so many close friends on the paper, and they were—they knew I was a straight arrow. They knew that I covered stuff fairly and honestly. I had a good reputation there. And the minute I was elected, I was an instant dirty politician. It was such a shock to me. Just a jolt. If I'd see somebody that I knew, you know, or he'd be assigned to cover or something, and I'd tell him, really, you know, and then I'd ask more. And finally, I realized that they were leaning over backwards, actually. You see, my husband was on the Oregonian, and they were probably being accused by other.
This is after you got elected to the legislature.
Yeah, yeah. That they weren't going to be accused of favoritism or...
Right.
I may have been just overly sensitive, but my goodness, it was a jolt because I was the same Connie that I'd always been.
Sure.
And if hadn't trusted me before, that's one thing. But they did, and then all of a sudden... My word, I would have to prove it, you know.
Well, I remember later on reading an article about that after you took over as mayor, and people were speculating whether you would have favoritism with the Oregonian since your husband was an editor there. And
managing editor.
It was managing editor. Yeah, here it goes. It's by Richard Noakes. Mayor's tie to paper bring no favoritism.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you'd seen that.
I don't remember.
Yeah.
I'm sure I did then. How long ago was that? Well, that must.
This was in on September 7th, 1979.
Mm-hmm.
When you were just taking over.
Oh, they took an awful lot of flack, and it worked. They leaned so far over backwards. When I announced that I was decided to run, it was on the back page, and a little, and when Ivan said, front page, big pictures and stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know,
so it may have actually hurt you.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there's no question. One of the reporters cried on my shoulder because they hardly ever came to speeches that I gave at luncheon clubs and things. But and this one guy who covered City Hall, and he says, you know, he says, this is really beginning to burn me up. He says, we never are sent to yours, but we are sent to every single puddle jumper, whatever thing that Ivan C. speaks at. And he said, I have covered the same speech 45 times. I can't think of anything else to say about it. But you see, but he kept on hitting, you know, at me, a tool of the Newhouse Press, or or that the Oregonian was in my pocket, because he couldn't make up his mind which way he wanted to go on this. This was Ivan C. It was either either I was the tool of the Oregonian or the Oregonian was a tool of mine. But, and I kept saying, you guys, you're just swallowing all this. But they did. They just let him say anything. And long coverages, you know, of nothing.
Okay. Well, but, so you were an editor for... Go ahead.
Al gave orders to the press that they were not to discuss me with them. They were to go to someone else, reporters or anything. But he still got all kinds of people calling and saying, and he said, well, what do you think I should do? Should I divorce her? Is that, well, you know, you should quit. Well, what are we going to live on, you know? It's, yeah.
You were editor of the Home and Garden section for how long?
Oh, it seemed like forever, but I can't remember. Let's see. Well, I ran for legislature in 66, didn't I? And you said the strike was in 59.
I believe so.
And someplace along in there, I took, when I quit the Oregonian, I did that real estate course thing and...
Oh, right. Right. It was about that time?
Oh, yes, right after I quit. Mm-hmm. Francis Lambert asked me if I'd... And I think I told you...
After you quit the Oregonian?
Yeah.
At what point? When you were...
When I quit.
When you quit going into the legislature? Or when you...
No, when I quit the Oregonian.
Uh-huh.
When I...
After your husband... After you were married and your husband wanted you to... At that point, early on in the... I see. Before you became editor of the Sunday section.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, but, so it... did I move on and up into the... No, I think I probably ran, maybe when the strike was settled, he talked me into quitting again. Oh, I know what he did, that rotten man. Oh, sure.
I'm gonna call him downstairs.
I know what he did.
Himself.
That son of a gun. Tricky. You can. I'll tell you how you can find the time exactly if you check on the nuclear ship, the Savannah.
Uh-huh.
That son of a gun, he gave me a Christmas present, was a ride home from Hawaii on the Savannah. This was very tricky to do, but he had all kinds of clearances. Mm-hmm. And since he'd been down to Atlanta, you know, the space thing, and in... when it was Canaveral, because that was his real love, is space stuff and airplane type junk and military stuff.
Uh-huh.
And so he knew how to do it, because he bought me a seat on the thing, and he surprised me about less than 2 weeks before Christmas. Can you believe? And that he'd bought me a trip to Hawaii through a friend of ours who owned a travel agency. And I was to have 2 weeks in Hawaii starting just before Christmas. And I couldn't believe this. I was aghast. Since we couldn't afford to both go, and we had the kids, you know, here, so he was sending me my Christmas present to spend Christmas in Hawaii, and I was aghast. And he was so proud of himself. And then to ride home on the Savannah, the nuclear ship. And I still, to this day, I'm speechless about it. I couldn't think of anything worse. I mean, Hawaii is a romantic place. That's a place for the couples. Not for me to go over all by myself. And he'd signed me up for all these tour things and to go up to Hanalei Plantation.
Uh-huh.
And And he was so proud of himself, he said he told people, he almost didn't tell me he was going to wait until just about 2 or 3 days before I hadn't finished my Christmas shopping, for crying out loud. I'm always a person, I always arrive in a dead heat with Santa, you know? And I couldn't, and to get clothes, or to get ready, to get packed, to be gone for 2 weeks, to be on a ship for almost a week. You know, the Savannah was very, their schedule was very slow, so that in case they had any problems with the nuclear thing or anything, well, you could get out away from
what
everywhere.
What kind of a ship was it?
It was the nuclear ship, the Savannah, do you remember?
But it wasn't It was a nuclear-powered,
yeah.
Like a battleship?
No, it was a merchant ship. It was supposed to show the peaceful use of atoms for the world in commerce and stuff. And what this was, they spent bundles and bundles building this thing. And the lounge was all white carpets and a white baby grand piano, this great, big, enormous thing. Instead of doing it, doing what they thought it would do, you know, to show, make friends around the world, they'd take it to all these various countries and invite people aboard. That was the only time they were ever on a merchant ship, United States merchant ship, and they thought all of our ships were this gaudy, gorgeous, fabulous thing. Phyllis Loritz, who used to be the travel editor at the Oregonian, said that this was, she'd been on the Queen Mary and all of the big travel ships, and she said they were nothing compared to this. My stateroom was this enormous thing with twin beds and a bedroom and sitting room, and oh, it was lamps and all these built-in. Oh, you wouldn't believe it was like the staterooms in the movies were, you know.
Right.
But anyway, here I was, I gasped, and I couldn't let him know how horrified I was because he'd done this. He'd spent all his money, and we didn't have any money. And then he was saying, can you imagine, he says, smugly, he says, I tell people, and they think, well, as they say, won't Connie be lonesome? And he says, I tell him, can you imagine Connie being lonesome? And I was nodding my head. Oh. And he was saying, can you imagine Connie not making friends wherever she goes? And I can see her shaking my head, just terrified. So I couldn't let him. I called them Christmas Day from the Big Island and cried, bawled. I was talking to my little kids, and hell, I was so lonesome for them. Oh, but I did.
You were gone for how long then?
Oh, it was over 2 weeks. And it was a wonderful trip, and there were marvelous people, and they were awfully nice to me. And I was very fortunate in making quite a few friends. Well, I like people, I love people, but oh, to be spending Christmas away from my family and everybody else over there, were in couples, you know.
Yeah.
They were so nice to include me a lot, but I felt like the fifth wheel. But anyway, that's a long way of telling you that you can find out exactly when I quit being editor of the Home and Garden magazine, because that rotten man, unbeknownst to me, quit for me, resigned for me from the Oregonian. Yes, and I got back, and that's look at him laugh.
Albert, you better get in on this and defend yourself. You're being maligned here.
I could have killed him. I had no idea. And
so, it was a three-way conspiracy between her doctor and her employer and me. The doctor says, get her out of there.
So was there a health reason for your having to leave?
Oh, I worked awfully hard. I worked ungodly. Hard because
so maybe he has a point here. He was looking out after your interests.
Oh no, heavens, I could manage it. He wanted me to come home and cook his meals and stuff. Yeah.
You can't cook worth a damn. Oh.
Well, you did write that I hate to cookbook.
Yeah, that's right.
So maybe he has a point.
Well, no, my feeling is there's lots more important things to do than cook. But I'm a good cook when I want to. But I.
You didn't want to quit.
I didn't want to quit. Yeah. No. I wasn't that wild about being editor of the Home and Garden magazine, I must admit that. I still say I preferred assignments, general assignments.
So when you came back, then what did you do after that trip, then? And you no longer had your job?
Yeah.
Was that when you got into the real estate?
Oh, I wonder. I wonder if it was.
Could you arrange trips to, what, the South Pacific and...
Oh, those are mostly.
Oh, that was real. That was less travel. That was the other. That was leading the tours to Europe and South Pacific. But the real estate was a little bit different, wasn't it? It was that was between jobs in the Oregonian too, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was after I'd quit. Whether it was the first time or the second time, I don't know.
Did you ever go back to work for the Oregonian again?
Nope. Uh-huh. Nope. The managing editor told me that how they didn't much encourage husband and wife on the paper, that I'd have my job whenever I wanted it, which I thought was a neat thing. Uh-huh. Was that when I quit the first time? Because I certainly wouldn't have had the Home and Garden editorship. They wouldn't have held that open for me. But I never did go back.
So then what did you do?
I did some freelancing. They'd ask, I'd get a call occasionally, and they'd ask me if I'd like to do a story on such and such for them and on something, and I'd do it on freelance. Always wait till the very last night and stay up all night writing it.
and your leading of tours happened during the same time too?
It was, there weren't all that many of those, and it was more of a deal so that I could pay my way to go. I think I'm part gypsy, and I love to travel, and as I said, newspaper salaries aren't famous for being munificent, and so I would set up tours, and then that way I'd get to go. And it was the same friend who... that I did it for, who had arranged the tour that Al whomped up for me to the islands.
What other kind of activities were you involved in during the time?
Well, I was active in quite a few issues, you know. But you asked me last time what they were.
You, in terms of recreational activities, you have mentioned that you've been fly fishing and you were also
camping.
You also did a lot of sailing and racing of sailboats too.
Oh yes, we raced, and then Al became Commodore of Corinthian Sailing Association. I don't see our boat up there. It's he didn't think that it was appropriate for that's a racing association. He didn't think it was appropriate for the Commodore to race in the races. I don't know why, but he insisted that I race our boat. He seems to get me into more things that I don't want to do. It's his idea, you know, that I run for legislature. And it was... and he had me race that boat, and I was panic-stricken. I'm a darn good crew. I'm really good on the jib and on the spinnaker, and I was fine, but I didn't want to take the tiller and run the main. I hadn't had that much experience with it.
How did you do?
Well, we didn't commit any public nuisances. I got this real nice guy to crew for me. He called me Captain Honey. It was Captain Honey. And he was a good crew, and we didn't win anything. We didn't get any second or third, but as I said, we didn't commit a nuisance, and we weren't last. A lot of the times we weren't last, which I thoroughly expected to be, always, because that just wasn't my thing. Oh, we may have gotten a third from on occasion, you know, but we sure as heck didn't win anything.
Other things that Al was involved in, aside from that, other things that he was doing? Other organizations or activities that he had going? That I imagine as being a managing editor, he probably
Oh yeah, he
had his hands in a lot of things.
Yes, quite a bit, and he was an editorial writer, mm-hmm. and was, in fact, because of some of the things that he had covered so and editorialized so, were some of the things shaped the way some of the things that I espoused in legislature, such as the mass transit. I felt so strongly about that, and that came directly from his interest in editorializing. And are we running out already?
No, we're fine.
Okay.
What about professional organizations that you were involved in at all? Journalism, through journalism?
I was a
business?
Theta Sigma Phi, and that's the Women's Journalism Honorary. And I can't remember.
Uh-huh. I
was active in League of Women Voters.
Right.
And
what did you do for them?
I was on their board. They put me on the board before I'd gotten my membership card. I said, wait a minute. Mary Rieke was, I think, to blame for that. But I remember when I was on the Oregonian, Frida Cowling was Women's Club editor, and she had said that what she was going to do when she retired, she said she didn't believe in belonging to or being active in organizations while she was at the paper, particularly because she covered so much of that, and she was smart not to. She would have really been chipped at a lot, but she said the one that she thought was so worthwhile was League of Women Voters, and so that's. I think I'd asked her about it when somebody contacted me about joining. And as I said, they had me on the board before I'd even gotten my membership card. I was learning the hard way.
What about the Citizens School Committee? You were on.
Oh yes, that was a very worthwhile thing. I thought we covered that, didn't we? My father was one of the founders of the Citizens School Committee, and
yes, you'd mentioned that.
And when he started having his heart attacks and stuff, and he had to start cutting down on things, he asked me if I would take over his seat on that, because he thought it was so important. In those days, it was easy to get elected to the school board because it wasn't any big thing. People didn't work hard at that at school, and so people who wanted to be politicians and run get an office would run for the school board because it was easier to get elected to, and then they'd use that as the stepping stone for name familiarity and on up to legislature. And Dad and a number of the other businessmen in Portland, he talked to I'm the guy who was president of Lippmann's, which is no longer around, and the bank, a couple of the bank presidents that were friends of his, and I can't remember who all, but they were people who thought that education was too important to be allowed just to be run by people who didn't really care that much about it, or were using or had connections, things to gain by it. There was a lot of that going on there, too. And so they formed an organization to try and talk good people into running for the school board and then supporting their candidacy, offering to help get them elected, because there were people who hadn't thought about running and weren't the slightest bit interested in campaigning. And so these guys did this, and they contributed their money, and they tried to raise money. It was a lot of the blind leading the blind, but their hearts were pure, and they met at the library, and they would come up with names. And that worked just great. They got a lot of their people elected, and it was keen. And then folks started taking advantage of them, because they were a bunch of just lambs in the...
They were very
naive. Well, since they met in the library, you couldn't keep anyone out. Mm-hmm. We used to, when we set up the membership for the school, we said it couldn't be teachers who belonged in there, it had to be people who didn't have an axe to grind, you know, right. Some sort. Well, we had a I remember trying to get members, you know, people, right kinds, you know. We got representatives from the PTA and representatives from, I can't remember what, right. And then the library, somebody complained, and the library said, you can't have meetings in the library that aren't open to the public. Right. So it had to be open to the public, and so old bunches of people from the teachers' union, the real wild.